Hello again, and welcome to a very special NABBW teleseminar on a topic of huge interest to Boomer women and their families, what you need to know now to plan your new retirement. My name is Ann Holmes. I'm your moderator and the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, an organization dedicated to educating and empowering women at midlife. This call, like those we do every month, is one of the ways we serve our membership. In a moment, I will introduce our panel of guest experts, but before we launch into our topic, let me say a few words about how this call will proceed. For the next 60 minutes or so, the phone lines will be muted and my guests and I will be discussing tonight's topic. Then I will open the lines for questions from you, our listening audience. If you have a question before the lines are open, use the box on your computer screen to type it in. I'll see that when I have a chance to look back to the box and pass it along to our experts at the appropriate time. Now, let me introduce our panel of guest experts, each a specialist on a topic of related to our topic of new retirement. And I will begin with Pamela J. Sams, CRPC. Pam is NABBW's Retirement Planning Associate, a frequent teleseminar guest, and an expert on personal finance. She's spent the past dozen years helping women and their families improve their personal and financial wealth through solid financial planning. More importantly, Pam is president of Jackson Sams Financial Services, a financial planning and wealth management firm located in Herndon, Virginia, near the Dulles Corridor. There, she focuses on helping women understand the importance of financial and retirement planning by placing their needs first. Pam firmly believes sound investment management starts with understanding each woman's goals. In fact, she insists that before any investment decisions can be made, her clients need to work through their own personal financial plan. Pam holds an MBA in financial management from Averett University and earned her CRPC certification, Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor, through the College of Financial Planning. She is president of Jackson Sams Financial Services in Northern Virginia and, as a financial advisor, focuses on helping women understand the importance of financial and retirement planning by placing their needs first. She believes sound investment management starts with understanding each woman's goals. Before investment decisions can be made, she takes each client through the proper steps in developing a financial plan. Now, in the past, Pam and I have talked about important topics such as long-term care and how couples are retirement challenged because they don't take time to sit down and really talk about their retirement goals and dreams. We've also discussed how boomers aren't doing a good job of planning the financial strategies they'll need to make retirement possible. As a result, Pam and I are very aware of two things. One, Americans are living longer, and two, as a group, we are not prepared to retire. Next up on our panel, we have Carol Lee Duckworth and Marie Langworthy, authors of the book Shifting Gears to Your Life and Work After Retirement. Let me introduce each of them to you. Carol Lee has a doctorate in instruction technology and distance education. She's dedicated her career to working to empower people to become their own more complete and fulfilled selves. To this end, she co-created the Common Cause award-winning Center for Reemployment Services, serving displaced workers, displaced homemakers, and 55-plus career changers, stimulating their mental capabilities to prepare them to select and enter new careers. She also designed and redesigned courses and programs for technical colleges and industries in order to empower and increase critical thinking and technology use skills and confidence. She created and launched College Online, which you can find at the easy URL of www.college-online.com, to increase access for students of all ages and life situations, enabling them to enhance their skills and advance their careers anytime, any place, any person, any pace. Since she's shifted gears herself, Carol Lee has focused on writing articles, courses, and books to empower individuals of all ages to reach for their dreams. Marie Langworthy is a former educator and administrator and also holds a doctorate in instruction technology and distance education. In fact, I'm guessing Carol Lee and Marie met while pursuing their doctorates, but they'll have to tell us that because I don't know for sure. Marie tells me that prior to becoming an author, she derived her greatest satisfaction in identifying underachieving adults, empowering them, turning them loose, and watching them grow professionally. Now, in her 21st century life, Marie has shifted gears too, creating a new niche teaching 55-plus boomers to use basic technology tools. She also works with and supervises future teachers enrolled in a local university's graduate program. Not one to shy away from multitasking in her own web-based business, Super Writing Services, which is found at www.superwritingservices.com, she exercises her passion to write it right the way you want to say it, providing her clients with a whole spectrum of business, professional, and personal writing services. As editor-in-chief for New Cavity Press, she specializes in the spit and polish process of wordsmithing the next potential great American literary piece or future New York Times bestseller. She admits that she's still a work in progress, trying to determine what she'll do if and when she ever grows up and grows old. In the meantime, she continues to welcome the adventures of each new day. Now, all of our experts are boomers themselves, and so they're not just about helping the boomer generation move forward into retirement. They're about helping boomers create a new and entirely fresh perspective on their next life journey. But getting back a little bit, I'd like to say a little bit about the book that Carolee and Marie have written, Shifting Gears to Your Life and Work After Retirement. It's a monumental achievement. It's also a book that I wish I could say I wrote. Here's why. Carolee and Marie know, as Pam and I do, that here in the United States since 2012, we have more than 10,000 adults turning 55 plus every day. And since we boomers have always been trendsetters, everyone is speculating about what we will be doing for the next 30 to 50 remaining years of our lives. And I think a lot of us are too. Arguably, this next period of our lives could be our best life passage, but first we need to shift gears, rediscover ourselves, then redesign our upcoming lives. So I say that Shifting Gears is a one-source call to action for all 55-plus boomers to use in reinventing their own personal and professional next phase, presenting a creative, compelling, specific roadmap of how boomers can and will live their life and best opus energetically, creatively, and productively. Now, the thing is, the world is a different place than it was a few years ago. I recently read a headline that started out asking, "Is death the new retirement?" And it went on to report that AARP, I'm glad you laughed at that, it's attention getting. It went on to report that AARP, which generally tries to make older Americans feel better about their futures, says that 40% of Americans now report that they expect to work until they drop. This because many are discovering that their pensions are bankrupt, their retirement accounts are underfunded, and some question whether or not federal support systems like Medicare or Social Security are fiscally sound or will be around when we need it. So now I have to give you the knowledge, the information, that information that I just read you came from an ad for a publication called Investing Daily, and I'm sure that they have their own axe to grind in the whole process. So I don't really subscribe to the concept that things are quite that dire, and I'm hoping that they really aren't. But if they are, we need to know so that we can try to work up a new plan for our final years. But given that long and lengthy introduction, I feel like I've been talking way too long here. I'm going to ask Pam, Carolee, and Marie to, if they'd like to say a few words before we get into tonight's call.
Well, I don't really
want to
say...
Well, I guess since I was... Go ahead. Go ahead, Marie.
Well, I was just going to say, as you were talking, Anne, I'm thinking of all the ideas that you brought to the surface and all the things I'd like to talk about and speak to Pam about and share with Carolee about, because you raise so many issues that are relevant to boomers. And now more than ever, I think that Pam's role in the 21st century, especially in this country, is so important. I so wish that that 25 or 30 or 40 years ago, I had met a Pam, because I think my financial status would have been vastly different than it is now. And so I can't imagine how relevant what Pam does, how relevant it is to boomers mm-hmm. today, which brings me to, like, I'm looking at some of the questions that I have for Pam, and I wonder if, since she began her career, how have the lives or the complexions of her clients changed, and what changes is she seeing?
Good question.
Thanks for that question, Marie. And I I deal with boomers planning for a challenging retirement every day. And so things are changing in terms of clients' needs, and what I am seeing is that really when I sit down with someone is really I emphasize to clients that the need that they really need to start planning and start envisioning a 25 to 30 year retirement. And a lot of times people can't really grasp that because they're dealing with the daily grind every day, that there is basically I always call it a second act to your life,
mm-hmm.
that you never really think about until you really are addressed with that, or at least confronted with that reality. So it really causes them to explore, you know, what that retirement really means, and then really emphasize kind of what the retirement lifestyle is going to be, not only their savings goal, but what are you going to do for, you know, 25 or 30 years? A lot of times I get, oh, well, I'm going to travel, I'm going to play golf, I'm going to do some things, and, you know, I say, okay, that's the first year. What else
right.
is going to happen
mm-hmm.
in your life? You know, what type of plans do you have? And, you know, they never really think about planning those particular activities that's going to actually occur in retirement. So it's often a wake-up call for most people to really say, you need to also start focusing on this retirement lifestyle part. Of course, the savings part is definitely important as it relates to that. But really, you know, in relationship to, you know, the shifting gears part, what are you really going to be doing in terms of retirement lifestyle? So those are some of the things that I see changing, is that people are starting to really kind of plan more of their second act.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, Carol Lee and I, what you're talking about, this whole business about shifting gears, if our book is not about anything, it is not about directly about financing your retirement. That is not the thrust of the book at all. Carol Lee and I, you talk about second acts. Well, from our perspective, our book divides our lives into three phases. The phase of becoming, which was the phase that we went through as we educated ourselves and trained ourselves for whatever career that was going to be. And then the phase of being, which was the career which consumed so much of our adult life as we raised a family. And now we look upon it as a third phase, which Carol Lee eloquently can speak about when it comes to that third phase. Her whole thrust and idea about how you develop that third phase is very unique, in my opinion, in the book. Carol Lee, do you want to talk to that a bit?
Oh, about the third phase. Well,
yes.
I think it's the exciting part, really. And I know that, I mean, it's very common and very understandable for us to panic if we think we don't have enough money saved for retirement. But the exciting part, and not to put down the importance of saving, but the exciting thing is that I really think that in this third phase we have work to do. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that the reason we object to the idea of working after retirement is that we are thinking of just working, doing what we've been doing all this time, and we're tired of that. We're ready for something that's more focused, more true to our authentic selves, more what it is we think we could uniquely do in this life or contribute in this life. So we have a life work. Maybe the third phase is really about your life work. What is it that you want to do that you can uniquely do that will be of benefit to others and possibly earn money at the same time? So it's that third phase is really not about moving on and on doing the same old thing. It's about discovery, the discovery of what it is you've always wanted to do, and getting back to your most essential self and seeing how to carry forward on that, and and have a substantial piece of work that you're engaged in for the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
As you put it so well once, Carolee, you said, most of us spent in our second phase, our work defined us. And in this phase, we are going to define our work, if that's what we choose to do, rather than the other way around.
Exactly. And that's no small task. That's why we've talked a little bit about the book that Marie and I've written, but the reason we wrote the book, when we first wrote the book, we were reading the book for our own use as well as writing it for everyone else's use, because it's no small thing to go to define what it is you're going to do. It's something that has just kind of, I know we, when my dad and I, when I was in eighth grade, I can still remember, we would sit down with a workbook that was, who are you and where are you going?
Mm-hmm.
And those were hard questions then and still hard questions now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Carolee, what you said about define what you're going to do, one of the strengths of the book was, before you can even do that, you need to go 9 steps backwards and figure out, who am I? Do I really know who I am? Or, if I think I know who I am I the same person that I was 25 years ago? What are my interests? What are my talents? What are my values? So we all start by looking inward before we look outward. And that takes a whole paradigm shift. Instead of running off to figure out, what am I going to do? We first ask ourselves the question, who am I?
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah,
Pam,
I mean,
I'm
you know,
curious.
Along that. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just
going to
say,
Go ahead. Go ahead. Oh, what I was going to say is that, you know, that's some of the work that I do with my clients and kind of puts them aback some, because I'm more involved, not just the money piece, but also the kind of the values based on what do you value in life and what do you want to do and who are you and all these other questions. And a lot of times it's a really different whole, like you, Marie said, a paradigm shift. Because you haven't been asked those particular questions probably since you decided what you wanted to study in college or what you wanted to major in. And then you've kind of to start to plot your life and deal with the second phase. And then you enter or are about to enter the third phase, and you're asked those questions once again, is that,
mm-hmm.
okay, now
right.
What am I? What am I going to do? How am I going to leave a legacy to this world? What do I want to do that's most valuable to me, not how I was defined during that second phase? So it's quite a challenge, because, you know, a lot of times when I get to see people, they're just really just looking, thinking about, am I going to have enough? Am I going to have enough? And thinking about savings. And so I try to introduce those particular concepts and kind of the retirement lifestyle, not just the how many vacations I want to take and traveling, but have you really thought about what is going to define you in that third phase, and what do you want to do, and you know, what type of legacy do you want to leave, and what type of things do you see yourself doing? So it kind of opens up that whole thing, and so that's some of the activities that I work with when I deal with my clients, not only just the savings piece, but also trying to get them engaged in that other part of planning for retirement, which is kind of how defining what I want to do and how do I want to be and the things that I want to give back.
Excellent.
Pam, you know what? I have so many questions that I could ask you. One question that I would like to ask you is, in your experience, do you find that the attitudes of women and men differ greatly in terms of preparing themselves financially for retirement? And if so, how do you think they differ, and do you think that that's changing with women?
I think there's definitely a difference between men's attitudes and positions toward retirement, only because men tend to have more of a confidence and that they will live comfortably in retirement. And, you know, they're really focused on more of that retirement lifestyle. I want to golf and I want to do all of those. So it's a different type of attitude towards retirement. They'll think they'll be okay. But on the other side, women, we're just kind of worry warts at the core in terms of worrying about, are we going to run out of money? Or are we going to become a bag lady? Am I going to be a burden to my family? So the attitudes towards going towards a retirement sometimes is a little more angst than it is the excitement piece, because we have all of these different variables that we're worried about, because we know statistically women, we're going to live longer. And so our main concern is, how am I going to, you know, plan for a longer retirement, and am I going to run out of money, and then really having that confidence around those particular financial issues. So those are some of the differences that I see in terms of men's attitudes going towards retirement versus women at that point, only because we're just really worried about the running out of money and becoming a burden to family, and kind of what I call the bag lady syndrome, is that no matter how much money that I see, you know, some women with, you know, you could be making $50,000 a year, you could be making $50 million a year. It's still the same mentality that I'm
really
going to end up somewhere
and,
you know, not being taken care of because I don't have, you know, this. And it's one of those psychologies that women have when we deal with our finances.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Pam, do you... What advice do you give to people who are beyond the boomer stage? I have been reading so many articles. It's become almost a weekly thing about the fact that it isn't a possibility, it's a strong probability that many boomers will live to be 100 and beyond. It's a strong probability. So, and I'm sure none of us ever thought in those terms. What specific, tangible, practical advice do you give to people who come to you and say, oh, my God, I never thought I was going to live to be 100, and I don't think my money's going to last? What strategies do you give them?
Yeah, that is quite a tough one and a tough conversation to really have.
Yeah.
So it all comes down to really figuring out what type of resources they still have. And then everything comes down to reviewing living expenses, really to see if there's some ways to reduce and eliminate some particular things out of the budget. Because once you start, once you're on a fixed income, you know, you have limited resources that are available to you. And in a lot of the times during that particular stage and age in life, you're relying heavily on Social Security as the main resource for income. Though, you know, a lot of boomers, early boomers who retired, you know, earlier than in their 70s and 80s now, still had, you know, a traditional pension plan through work.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them have what they call annuity-type vehicles through a pension and then Social Security. But, you know, if you're solely dealing with those particular resources, they're limited. So you really have to kind of go through living expenses. If some things are really strained, you may look at some strategies and exploring some a reverse mortgage if you own your home and you need income versus the reverse mortgage is basically giving you income for your home. If it's more what they call house rich and cash poor, so you're exchanging those particular cash assets in the house to provide income as well. So there's, you know, some strategies that are available to boomers who, you know, realize, okay, I'm not really financially prepared for longevity, but, you know, it really takes some time to really explore options. And a lot of times what I see is that older boomers tend to not want to expose those particular challenges to a financial professional or even their own children to say, hey, I'm in trouble. I need to figure this out. So sometimes it's just really admitting that, hey, you know, I think you know, I may be in trouble financially in this aspect, but and then starting to open that conversation and explore options and before it's too late. So there are some things to do.
You know, when you're talking about the fixed income, that's one of the things I think needs to shift in people's minds. Mm-hmm. The idea that their income is fixed, because your income is only fixed to the degree that you don't work. You can
Correct.
Work and earn more income. So I think maybe part of the challenge and part of the need moving forward for people is to think in terms of what do I want to be doing in my life if I don't have enough money to do that, then I need to make some more money. And how am I going to do that? And to, in essence, unfix your income instead of trying to,
exactly.
To you know, put all that creative energy into figuring out how you're going to manage. I think, you know, it's time for people to expect more when they reach this point in their lives instead of expecting less.
You know, in our book, too, we talk about if you decide you need to or want to work, whether it be part-time or full-time, we talk about all the options. For example, one of the options is working for us. The irony of it all is, we boomers not only can give service, provide services, but we also need services. And there is a golden opportunity for boomers to work for and with other boomers, to provide services that other boomers do. And we have a whole entire chapter on just that. How can boomers serve and work and fulfill the needs of other boomers and earn an income while doing it? And this is a whole area of avocation and careers that is really just opening up. When you read that there are going to be 77 million of us
right.
who all need various types of services, I may need one type of service which you can provide, but you may need a type of service that I can provide. And so this is one of the things that we try to do in our book, to open up the minds of boomers and realize there are a lot, if you decide that one of the things, that one of the pathways you want to explore is the pathway of work, what are the variations of those pathways that you can use?
And so much of what's possible now was not possible. It's like all of our models and all of the examples we have in our lives and families and what we've seen of, with people who've come before us into retirement, they did not have the options that we do now. It's really stunning, some of the figures. The largest growth of labor right now is in contract work online. And there's every kind of work imaginable, creative work, artistic work, supervisory work, communications work, translation, teaching, guidance, you know, everything you can think of. A third of our workforce now, is one of the figures that I've run into, is contract workers. 90% of firms are using contract workers, and they're spending $120 billion a year to hire them. What a perfect market, again, you know, another perfect market, and then, again, this is another whole chapter in our book. But these are important jobs that can be done readily by a retired person. Nobody even will know that you have white hair because
right.
they're
in your pajamas.
you're sitting at a computer and or on the telephone, and you're using your very refined communication and interpersonal skills that you've developed the hard way by living so long and working so long, but making, you know, a tremendous difference in the process.
One of the strengths that I thought of, one of the strengths of our book, one of my favorite parts, is the index, the appendix, where we've listed the websites. And I have to honestly tell you, when I was writing, co-authoring the book with Carol Lee, as we came across these websites, these job-related websites that we wanted to include in the book, I had to discipline myself and remind myself that, no, I could not get on this website and start applying for jobs. I couldn't do this. I had to focus on writing this book. And so I had this whole bucket list of websites that I still do want to go back to apply to do some of this work, because there are so many opportunities out there. And the best part is you can control how much you work, when you work. My colleague, Carol Lee, works. She's worked from Las Vegas when I've been with her. She's worked from Italy. She travels all over the world and sometimes takes her computer with her and works, and sometimes she doesn't. It's amazing.
Yeah,
now she's using it all, for all as a tax deduction,
we
by the way. This is all tax deductible for her because she's working and she's... And now she's even developed this whole entire list of books that she is publishing on her travels.
Would you believe you can even work when you're doing a cross-Atlantic cruise? You're out in the middle of the ocean, and you can still be, you know, people can still think you're sitting there in your office behaving yourself.
But I think that, you know, just listening to that, to what you guys were talking about, I think it's also a mindset. I think, you know, a lot of boomers, we're kind of stuck in the old retirement model that this is what it looks like after. And so, you know, that's the really great thing about you guys' book, is that you explore these particular pathways that people may not have thought about, because they were just kind of, you know, going in one particular direction with the old model, thinking this is what retirement looks like. So if we can, you know, talk about I know you had mentioned you had seven kind of what is next pathways in your book. You know, let's talk a little bit about what some of those pathways are.
Well, the beautiful part about it, too, is that you can combine these pathways. For example, you can combine a life of leisure with volunteering or with travel or with being an entrepreneur, or you can work alone or with someone else. And I use Carol Lee and me as a perfect example. She and I have developed a rhythm. There are a lot of projects that she's working on alone, independent of me. I am working on projects alone, independent of her. We are collaborating on business ventures together. We travel separately and together. And so we are mixing and matching all of these various pathways in a really pretty good rhythm. Then there's the pathway of volunteering. Some people just want to give back. There are so many opportunities to volunteer, very creative opportunities, not the traditional opportunities that we remember of licking or stuffing our envelopes. There are so many creative opportunities where people who have very rich skills that they employed when they were successfully employed in the workforce can take those skills and use them to volunteer within their community. The websites that are available for people who want to volunteer are so robust. But the beautiful part of the seven pathways, and this is what Carolyn and I have tried to emphasize, is they are not mutually exclusive, and they are not either or. You can combine one or two or more of them very nicely. And
we added in the life of a student, because
Yes.
A lot of the pathways that we end up choosing, ours in particular, you know, we can speak personally about this, involve learning a whole bunch of stuff that you don't know how to do yet.
Oh, my goodness.
So we are, let's see, what are we combining? We have seven pathways. We're combining the life of leisure. You know, Marie can tell you that yesterday was, or I can tell you, I can tell on her, yesterday was the last day to take your boat out into the ocean before it got put away for the winter. So that's a little different to be doing in the middle of a week.
Exactly. Kelly, I can't talk to you tomorrow on the phone because it's the last boating day. But then again,
I was saying, well, let's get together and talk about this teleconference. And she said, well, I can call you when we get back.
On the other hand,
life
I
of
had
new
to
work,
be,
which also turned into the life of an entrepreneur.
Yes.
Of the life of a creative, as a creative, so we've got that mixed in because what we're doing, that what we love is the creative part, which also turned into the life of a student because, you know, somebody had to learn how to typeset a book, someone had to learn how to develop their book website, someone had to learn how to, everything we could find out about the topic of retirement so that what we were offering would stand on the shoulders of what's already out there. So the pathways are a challenge to expand yourself beyond just the one direction that you think you need to be going,
mm-hmm.
and create your own combination of paths that work together.
And now, Carolee, would you say that that's what Boomer's life and work will be like in retirement, is that we'll be able to pick and choose from these various different pathways, and employ some of them at the same time, or employ them not just serially but repetitively in different combinations?
I absolutely believe that's where the richness comes in, and that's where the excitement comes in, really. But it's almost a set of permissions, because once you give yourself permission to go in one or more of these directions, and once you give yourself permission to learn, you know, not to already know, but to learn new things that will make it possible for you to succeed in these new, along these new paths, then your days are just so filled with richness. You know, you can't wait to get going.
You know, one of the features of the book that I like, the one of the fun features of the book that I found were the snapshots, the senior snapshots. And what I loved about them was the variety that I found when we began. All of them are true. Every one of the snapshots, we have changed the names and we have amended or adapted some of the circumstances just a little bit so that only the person who was the subject of the snapshot would probably recognize themselves or someone very close to them. But all of them are true, and they're so varied and rich. And I found that one of the most fun parts of the book to write. It's amazing to see how people have, in fact, reinvented themselves and are doing, loving what they do and doing what they love and making, I want to include this caveat, making a decent supplementary income in most cases. No one, unless you're very lucky, and it may happen, you may find it becomes a very lucrative thing. But for the most part, most boomers are not willing to sacrifice all the other portions of their life in order to make a lot of money. They just want to supplement their income for the most part. And the snapshots show how well some boomers are doing this, doing what they love and loving what they do.
Well, that's fascinating. I'm curious from Pam's point of view, to what degree are you seeing this in the people that you work with, that they're talking to you about, that they see a need to work at least part-time or or that they're seeing this interest in? When you meet with people, are they seeing, coming to you and saying, I want to combine retiring and I want to combine the golfing and I also would like to be doing something that's useful, whether or not it makes money, or do they come to you more like, I don't have enough money, I need to figure out how to get the money that I need?
That's probably a majority of people is really, you know, how much am I going to need, but then I know I'm probably going to have to work because I have to work. So that's a large portion. But I do get, you know, some clients coming or potential clients to come and really, how do I create this lifestyle that I want in retirement, because I want to, you know, work part-time, I want to give back to my community, I want to, you know, start a business, I want to do a lot of different things. So it's, you know, that's kind of, you know, the fun part, like Carolee had said, is that, you know, you have all of these options that you can explore at that particular point in time. So, you know, the planning is a little bit different than somebody who comes to you and says, I'm not sure that, you know, I'm going to have enough to retire, and I know I'm going to have to work part-time because I need that particular resource of income in order to retire comfortably. So, you know, on the other side, it makes it a lot more fun than really having to do the other piece of that. So, and a lot of times what I see is that, you know, because of economic factors that have hit, you know, the country over the last few years after the financial crisis, is that, you know, portfolios are slowly recovering but haven't all recovered. So a lot of it is that I know I'm going to have to either work longer in order to meet my retirement goals and or work part-time in order to, you know, also fill those retirement needs and lifestyle needs that I have as well. So it's a combination of the two that I see.
Mm-hmm.
Pam, do you think that most boomers have reached the conclusion that out of necessity they're going to have to supplement their income? Or do you find that most of the people you deal with are very secure and financially comfortable?
I think a lot of them are really, I need to probably supplement my income in order to meet my retirement needs as well. And it all comes down to, you know, really defining what do you want retirement to look like for you. You know, so a lot of times if you have, you know, great expectations that you want in retirement, you know, then you will have to, you know, supplement the income to work if you, you know, you're going to live a modest retirement, things like that. You may have amassed enough resources for that. So really this kind of depends on how people are structuring their particular retirement lifestyle, so to speak. And so, you know, I would rather see people work part-time because they want to and not because they have to, but often that is the case.
Mm-hmm. You know what, you mentioned that you have a kit that you sometimes offer to potential clients to help them kickstart their process. Can you talk a little bit about the content and the purpose of this kit?
Well, the purpose is really trying to bring everything together prior to retiring, because there's a lot of different factors that a lot of people really, we just don't know, because we just keep plotting away day to day and never really plan for that, you know, phase three that you call it, of life after work, or, you know, life instead of work, whatever. And so basically starting to do, you know, and it's probably similar to what you guys do with that 10-point retirement countdown. It's similar where you, in the kit, you have a retirement planning worksheet that basically covers how much you're going to need for retirement, how much have you saved so far, kind of doing a benchmark of what you need and what you've saved, the different income resources that retirement income resources that you have available to yourself. And then there's a second piece, which is the retirement lifestyle worksheet, to really determine, you know, kind of how are you planning that phase three of your life and what do you want to do in retirement, a combination of the different pathways and, you know, entrepreneurship or a life of leisure, things like that. So there's a retirement lifestyle worksheet in there that covers that. And then, of course, you know, there's an expense worksheet, so you can start drafting, do a preliminary draft of your retirement budget. in there. So really those worksheets as a combination, worksheets and workbooks are really a combination of trying to bring everything together prior to retirement to really help address those particular retirement planning issues before you actually retire. I think my motto is always you would want to know this sooner rather than later. So let's try to bring everything together as we can to, you know, start exploring those particular issues and address those before retirement. Before you hop out and say, oops, I made a mistake, I didn't plan for this. So really the kit covers those particular worksheets and workbooks, and that's the sole purpose, is really to bring everything together prior to retirement.
Mm-hmm. And it is surprising, you know, I worked for the state. I was a college professor and worked in a state school. And it was surprising to me the college would offer these retirement workshops all day long,
mm-hmm.
and someone from Social Security would come, someone from the retirement system would come, all these different people would come and present, and I was just shocked at how ignorant I was. And on the other hand, I took very good notes and ended up having just a lot more money coming in retirement than I would have if I had just bumbled along. I found out I could buy, and I ended up buying 2 years of service, which put me at a higher level in the retirement plan, the state retirement plan. I ended up doing some things about Social Security, and actually I advised Marie, didn't I, about Social Security, because I knew about the, we were both widows, and we had benefits that we were entitled to benefits before, even before we reached retirement age, if we needed needed to use them. Very good to know. But that planning that you're talking about I think people are scared or just, you know, don't want to think about it. Would wish it would just all go away. But the good news is that in the doing of it, you can completely change your life after you retire. You really can have a different life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one thing I learned at a very young age, too, and I learned it the hard way by trial and error, is every person to their own profession. Don't try to, if your expertise is teaching, then teach. If your expertise is medicine, then do that. Don't try to manage your own money. Hire someone whose expertise it is to do that. Hire a professional. Find the best one you can find and put entrust a portion, certainly, of your money to that person. Don't try to do it yourself. Because everyone is an expert in their own area. And
yeah, we wouldn't try to wallpaper our bedroom ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's the key to it that I try to explain to a lot of people who come to see me, and then they decide for one reason or another they want to, you know, kind of do their own thing, is that, you know, I could go and do my own plumbing, or I can go and fix my own car, but, you know, do I do these things? No, because I am not a professional at it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the key to most of it, especially retirement planning, is that I always I give a retirement income I teach a retirement income course in my local community, and I usually start out with most people spend more time planning for their vacations than they actually do their retirement.
So true.
Because and you're dealing with that.
So true.
And you're basically, you know, dealing with the fun stuff, but, you know, you do have to deal with this as well. And when do you really find time to do all of that planning on your own? So it's best to really try to work with a professional that's their job to do that day in and day out, versus you kind of giving some time at once you get off from work, in between taking care of the kids, and then it's midnight and you're looking at your 401k statement and doing things. So it's a more of a challenge to it. So it's really best to try to to hire somebody to do this professionally for you, especially, you know, as Carolee mentioned, there's so many components and factors to right before you retire that you need to know. How do I take Social Security benefits? What's the best way to optimize those? How do I take distributions from all of the plans that I have accumulated, my IRAs, my 401ks? Because if you don't do it right, they can be costly and they could ultimately affect your lifestyle in retirement because you didn't make the right decisions prior or had the knowledge to make the right decision prior, or at least having those presented to you so you have options to do either or. So at least you know that they're available. If you don't know at all, you know, that's kind of a difficult situation. So I try to make sure people try to bring as much as they can together prior to actually retiring, before you actually hop out, because that's when, you know, once you've made the mistake, it's kind of hard to retroact a lot of those decisions on, am I going to take a survivor benefit on my pension versus doing something different, and a lot of the other things that you do have to make decisions on prior to retirement before you sign the paperwork. So I like to try to have everything together so you can start doing these retirement planning issues and know how you're going to plan for them accordingly.
Excellent. Wow.
I'm curious.
With Marie, I think I wish I'd met you a long time ago.
Oh, me? Pam, you mean?
No, I was Pam. I wish I'd met Pam a long time ago.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Pam, I'm curious. I don't want to put you on the spot, but have you done any thinking about, do you plan to work in retirement? And if you do, do you think that the work that you will be doing in this second act, as you refer to it, will be different from the work you're doing now? Or do you think that you're going to continue your first act right into your second act?
I've given it some thought. I mean, my whole goal in life is really to kind of do an early retirement from a primary career as a foundation. So maybe not in actual practice, but, you know, my main emphasis is really try to help as many people as possible, especially women, around this financial piece. So if it's not on a day-to-day practice standpoint and running my own practice, but really taking the message out on a larger stage in terms of maybe, you know, national and things like that, books and things. So, you know, it's still fairly going to be similar in terms of pursuing those particular goals. One of my other goals is really to start a foundation to help others in need. So, you know, that's more of what I think that my phase three would be, is really trying to continue to explore and educate and motivate women to do and empower women around their finances, but then also doing some of the other goals that I want is to start a foundation and help others and things like that. So retirement's going
to
look
a
little
write,
different.
You?
Yeah, and I have a book to write. Yeah, exactly. So that's one of those things that I have to. So it's really all about more of, we talked about the pathways, having the financial freedom really to kind of do the things that I want to do when I want to do them versus, you know, having to work and do things like that. So the aspect of probably continuing to work in some capacity is always going to be there. So I'll probably be, I guess, the retirement, death is the new retirement for me, I guess. that would probably be my path.
Excellent.
You know, this business of helping boomer women, it's so timely because, first of all, the rate of single parents has just skyrocketed. And secondly, women now have become assuming positions of power and with it wealth that they've never known before. So you're really positioned in a really good place to help women at a time when they really, really need it. There are so many women now that are single mothers, and many of these women have very important, prestigious professional positions where they're bringing in huge salaries, and you really are filling a need that I see is even greater than it was when our parents were young. Because of the changes in society.
No, I mean, it's so true. I mean, I see, you know, most of what I see is that, you know, like you said, single parents, but also
yes.
women who have gone through divorces and
yeah.
also widows that really need to focus in on the whole financial piece. Either their spouse took care of the finances before or they just didn't feel comfortable doing so. So it's, you know, it's all about empowering women around their
mm-hmm.
own finances to learn and educate
mm-hmm.
so they can make the best decisions
mm-hmm.
that they can. With
mm-hmm.
the money that they will, you know, amass, because
mm-hmm.
Boomer women will inherit a lot of wealth
mm-hmm.
coming up in this, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the generations to
mm-hmm.
come. So we really need to figure out how do we deal with this sudden wealth
mm-hmm.
that we'll be entrusted with.
The thing is, the empowerment piece is so important, and it feels good to know that you can carry out something that you're capable too. I need to confess that one of the projects I worked on back in my career day, when I was at Trident Tech in Charleston, was called a 55 and over program, which at the time I thought, oh my gosh, how old is that? But that does not seem that old right now. But the 55 and over, in order to be in that program, you had to meet poverty guidelines, and
mm.
I mean, these were, you know, people who, I think your income couldn't be over something like $500 or $600 a month. These were people who were really
mm.
struggling, and most of them were widows, and many of them had lived very good lives while their husbands were alive, and most of them had never worked at all. And you, like you were saying, Pam, their husband had taken care of the finances, and they
mm-hmm.
didn't really know anything about any of this. And so here they now found themselves trying to live on their own and had very little money. And our program was not to just give them money, but to retrain them and help them
mm-hmm.
find their careers. And they were a shock because we thought, okay, widows who have never worked, let's see, why don't we – and we had the money. It was a funded project, so we had the money to train them in anything they wanted and then to help them find a job. And it was a performance-based contract for us, so we didn't even get paid until they actually were placed, had a job placement. But anyway, we thought, okay, we'll teach them, we'll offer things like child care, cleaning services. I mean, we had all, you know, maybe cooking, and we had all of these ideas. They came in, they took one look at us, listened to the whole thing. They had been waiting all their lives to have a career or to do something or to be in charge of something.
Mm-hmm.
They said, forget all that. We've already raised our kids. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to do any of those things. We want to learn this technology. We want to learn nursing. We want to learn, you know, they had their own
agendas.
Major hopes that had been carried through their whole lives without, you know, being addressed at all. And so that's what we did. You know, we offered nursing program, nursing assistant programs. We weren't qualified to do the whole nursing thing, but they could go on into nursing. And we called in all kinds of technology. They essentially took over the entire downtown campus of Trident Tech. Everybody in the campus for a while, or the majority of people, were gray-haired. they completely filled the computer lab. They had to get more machines because they were there from night, you know, dawn until dusk, learning what they thought they needed to learn. But once they were empowered, it was just like setting loose a torrent.
I was going to say, it sounds like a wonderful program.
Yeah, it actually was. I learned a lot. They learned a lot, but I think I learned more.
Well, that's fascinating. I'm curious. I'm not sure whether this is for Marie or Carol Lee, but I'm curious that we've talked a little bit about the importance of having enough to retire, and I know that that's a crucial thing, that that we have to have the financial wherewithal to retire. But you've written a book that I think says to me that you think that there's a lack of lifestyle planning for retirement that that also is something that we need to do more with. So am I correct about that, that you don't want us to just fall into retirement? You'd like us to do a little planning about it?
Yeah. I think it's really, I mean, it's both are important. Of course you need the money to survive, and mm-hmm. of course you need to be able to be independent and meet your finances, but you also need to have a plan for what it is you're going to do. You know, this is a lot. 30 years, that's a lot of years.
Mm-hmm.
I met, you know, Marie was talking about the snapshots, but we both had so many people that we could cite and who had taught us about their own experiences, of their stories. But one story was a man I met up in the mountains, and he had retired from a very heavy-duty supervisory, managerial position, I guess you'd call it. And all he wanted to do was read. And by the time I met him, he was working again, because he told me he read. He sat down and started reading, and he read 234 books. he could tell me to the book how many books he had read. And he said, then he just got out of his chair and he said, huh, well, that's the end of that. You know, I need a job. And so he had gone into real estate, and that's how I happened to meet him. He was showing homes to one of my friends who was looking to buy a mountain house, and had, was up there staying with me in our mountain house while he was looking. But these are such important years in our lives, and such important things that we can bring to the table. It's really, really important to think about what we want to do, to make use of those, to contribute with those, and to stay engaged ourselves. There's benefits in every direction.
Well, you know, too, it's a luxury that most boomers never had, because they quickly, most of us in our generation, we got married when we were young, the children came. We had to buckle down, get a job, support the family, buy the house, send them to college, do all those things. And we were so focused on the family, we never had the luxury of stepping back and saying, wait a minute, you know, if I could do anything in the world, would I be doing this? We never had the time to even think about that. We just became like robots, where, and we had very successful, many of us, fulfilling, healthy, wonderful lives. However, many of us were too young and immature at the time, or financially, circumstances did not allow us to follow our dream, or we didn't have the maturity or the hindsight or the foresight to really be able to think about, what am I suited to do? What is my passion? And now
right.
We're at the point in our lives where we have that luxury of time to ask ourselves, who am I? What is my passion?
And because we already have some of the income we need,
right.
And what we're going to be making is going to be a supplement to that, we actually can do the impractical stuff. I mean, I knew early on that I wanted to write, but I knew, too, that I wasn't going to be able to make a living at it. So it was, you know, fast forward to age 65 when I actually got back to the thing I wanted to do in the first place.
And, you know, I can remember this little story that I love to tell. My husband's grandson, we were talking about, I try to emphasize with them that the sky is the limit, that they can do or be anything they want to do or be. And so I was talking to one of my husband's grandson's, his name is Tyler, and I said, Tyler, you can do anything you want, so you need to think about that. And I said, for example, I said, if I could do anything in the world, if I could choose to do anything, I would be a film editor or a cartographer because I love maps. And he said to me, he turns to me and he says, well, why don't you? It never entered his mind that there would be any obstacle to prevent me from becoming a film editor or a photographer. He saw it as a no-brainer, you know. What's stopping you from doing that was his question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, he's right.
He was. He was absolutely right.
You have to learn a few things first.
Exactly.
But that's actually the fun part.
Exactly. But I think this is what we have to ask ourselves. If time and money and opportunity were no option, were no obstacle, what is it that I would want to do? And maybe, just maybe, I can do that now.
And I think it's really important, you know, a big piece, and we keep coming back to it in the book, is that we've got to give ourselves permission to learn more. Just because we don't already know how to do it, even if we're in our 60s, doesn't mean we can't. It's, you know, there are online courses, there are tutorials, there are books, you know, on any topic. You can just dig in and start reading. And doggone, if you can't get up to speed in something that you've always wanted to work with, but you thought you didn't know enough. Well, you probably don't know enough, but that doesn't mean you can't know enough. It just means you need to get to work. And actually, the learning is tremendous fun. We had a motto, and Anne Marie and I did go to school together. That's where we met. But the logo on our T-shirt for our graduate class was that learning is hard fun.
Okay, yeah. I like that.
I'm going to tell you
it is.
I'm going to tell you a little story
about
that.
And once you've learned it, you feel really good, and then it opens all kinds of pathways, if you will, based on what you've learned.
I'm going to tell you a little story about Carol Lee now, a little secret that she has, which she passed along to me, and I thought was typically creative of her and entrepreneurial of her. What Carol Lee does when she doesn't know when she knows nothing about a topic, this is what she does. She has this little trick that she employs. She buys 5 of the best books that she can on the topic, and she reads them cover to cover. And her conclusion is that after she has read 5 books on a particular topic, she knows more than the average person does about that topic. Now, isn't that a great way to learn and to decide whether you want to pursue a given direction or not?
Oh, I think it's excellent. And I would, is it possible that if you're on a tight budget that you could find these 5 books in a library, or is it more specific knowledge, Carol Lee, that you wouldn't find in your typical library?
Well, I like to go on Amazon and buy the books, and there, you know, again, you can get them used. If you're trying to save money, you can get a surprising number of books at heavy discounts. But I mark them up, I highlight them, and take notes, and then I keep them on my shelves. I have, I'll tell you something. There was a reviewer came in and interviewed me, and I'm in the Charlotte paper today with a half-page article and this humongous picture of me standing in front of my shelf of retirement books, because he was so impressed. I had like 25 retirement books now. I read the 5, and then I read 5 more, and then I read 5 more. And so there's this picture with all of these retirement books, you know, with me standing in front of the bookshelf. But yes, you can get books in the library, but when I'm talking about learning, I'm talking not just about reading, but about consuming. the information and starting to use it, which means you probably need the book.
Starting to apply it, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's really the main key is, Carolee, you had mentioned giving permission, and a lot of times with anyone, it's going to be a limited belief that I'm too old to learn, I can't do this, I can't do that, and there's a lot of I can't. So you really don't kind of focus in on the learning piece because, you know, you put so many blocks into your way that I can't do this. So I think that's a lot of times where, you know, when boomers are, we're trying to reinvent ourselves after retirement, if it's not the easy way, sometimes we don't want to have to go through 5 or 6 steps to learn something in order to do it.
Well, and the main thing, you know, with learning, the it's called self-efficacy expectations. It's we are limited by our only by our perceptions of what is and is not within our reach. Anne was reading that stuff about the Common Cause award-winning Center for Adult Retraining and so forth. We were working with people who I have heard the same story, I swear, over 4,000 times. And it goes like this. I can't do blank. I can't do math. I can't do algebra. I can't work with technology. I can't write. I can't. You just fill in the blank. And I would set up my job at that point, my career, was to set up what was called Mastery Learning Labs. And I would sit all these folks down, and I would say, okay, prepare to prove yourself wrong about yourself. You are going to be shocked when you find out that all of your life you've thought this, and it's not true. And that's where we would begin. And they would, once I set them loose, and I, you know, there's a whole system to mastery learning, but the gist of it is that you have the things that you've learned and the things that you haven't learned yet, and you can't learn the next things until you learn the things that they depend on. So if you can't add, you're not going to be able to add fractions. But once you learn to add and subtract and multiply and divide, you're going to be able. So going back to the piece that was missing and filling it in, suddenly all these other things came within reach, and each of them would model to the other the possibility. And so they started to believe that they could because someone else who couldn't now could, and that meant that they could too. And so the group would kind of infect the group, and they would turn into wild people. They would just consume every piece of challenge that I could come up with, and I would sometimes run out of things for them to learn because they just were on fire. But what they were doing was very it was good and happy, but it was sad in a way because some of them, I mean, they had gone through their whole lives believing that they couldn't do something that they could. They of course they could. And so, you know, that's the piece about learning is that we all have these notions about what our limits are, and pretty much all of those notions are wrong. And that changes all of the possibilities.
You know, Anne, when you were reading a little bit of, and talking a little bit about our biographies, to personalize it a bit, you mentioned that one of the things that I used to love to do was to hire people who I thought were underachievers and turn them loose and let them discover themselves. And the sign that I used to have up in my on my desk all the time was, people become what we think they are. And it's really related to what Carolee was saying. So many times, if you would just believe that somebody could attain something and just turn them loose and give them give them the authority they needed to develop that particular strength, they would blossom and they would take off. And I remember people would say, well, aren't you afraid they're going to show you up? No, not at all, because that's what a good administrator or a supervisor does. He or she, if they're smart, they surround themselves by people who are smarter than they are, and that only makes their life a lot easier.
Amen.
You know?
Well, I would think that all makes sense, but I'm thinking about what Pam does, and I'm thinking would you say, Pam, that the greatest stumbling block for women in terms of their financial attitudes is this I can't, I don't know money kind of a attitude?
It's definitely that, and that's where I usually start is to the empowerment process is to take that I can't and that fear to empowerment. So it's a fear to empowerment phase that you really have to kind of own up to. I have to overcome this fear. I've been telling myself I'm not good at math, I'm not good at finances, I'm not good at this, I'm not good at that. Wipe all of that slate clean and start from here is that it's an education process. If you know what you need to know, then you will overcome those fears and then you can become empowered with your finances, but you got to leave that other stuff go. You got to let that other stuff go. Is that I always say that whatever happened in the past happened in the past. When you come to me, basically, whatever happened, whatever poor decisions you think you made in the past, it's done. Let's start over and let's move forward from there. But you do have to admit first that let's stop saying, you know, I can't, and let's, you know, start the education process in order
exactly.
to really
oh,
how
you.
Do I make sound financial decisions.
Yeah, and you can't do it without math.
Yeah, and you can't do it without math. And that's
you've got to get these numbers under your wrap, and that's really good that you're getting them to do that. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I actually had the dean of students in my college at Trident when I was there used to say that thing about I can't do math, and I was thinking, don't even say that. You know, don't. Don't let anyone hear you say that.
Yeah.
And what are you going to do about it this weekend? You know, because you cannot go through your life with that. And,
with
and
fear
you know,
of anything. Fear of anything.
Mm-hmm.
The fear we fear what we don't know. Fear is based on ignorance. And that's why, Pam, so many women, they're frightened of what they don't know. They don't understand finances, so they're afraid of it. And they avoid it and shy away from it at all costs, which is exactly what Carol Lee is saying. That's the exact opposite of what you should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But I think it's also, you know, it for women, and it's a society thing. You know, we've always been taught from little girls that men were, boys were good at math and women weren't good at math.
They're in charge
and
of the money.
And then we grew up all of the, and they're in charge of the money and they can handle this. And then we grew up that way and we keep it with that same limited belief and mindset that we can't do math, we're not good at finances, we don't know. But I always say it's a lack of knowledge and you can always go learn how to handle it.
There you go.
But you need to take that first step and owning it and saying, okay, it's a fear and I have to overcome that fear to gain the knowledge in order to properly work with the finances. But you do have to kind of admit first that I do have this limited belief. I need to overcome that. Now I need to educate myself and, you know, work with somebody that will be able to educate me and empower me. And then how do I handle the second piece of it? So it's a phase. I mean, you know, it's a process that you have to go through as well. And, you know, when we repress it so much is that we don't take care of it. And then we wait too long before getting help or tackling it. And that's where I see some of the stumbling blocks with women in terms of preparation for retirement is that we've kind of put it on the back burner so long because we feared that we didn't really want to take care of it until it's too late or we waited too long. And now we have to play catch up on it. So I try to, you know, get people in that process a little bit earlier to, you know, accelerate the learning so we can make those decisions in order to move forward.
Excellent.
Well, that makes sense, Pam. I know that when I introduce you, I always tell about how that you believe that sound investment management starts with understanding each woman's goals and how you insist that they have to work through their personal financial plan. But when you're working with a new client, and I don't know if this would apply for all ages of new client or you know, because I'm thinking that your clients probably range in age from in their 30s to in their 80s maybe, but do you have a hard time with helping women? I mean, if you ask them what are their goals, do they have the ability to tell you, or is that kind of a gray area, a blurry thing?
No, I mean, I think everybody has, at least especially when we know what we pretty much know what we want.
Mm-hmm.
But do we know how to get there? That's kind of the key. So it's always a conversation of, okay, you know, I think Marie had mentioned it before, giving everything else, if you can do whatever you want to do, what would you be doing? And so that's kind of where I have to start. And it's like pie in the sky, the sky's the limit. Let's just write it all down and get it all down on paper. And then, you know, I always tell people financial planning is basically matching money to your dreams. We got to start with the dreams first, and then each dream, will some aspect of it may have some monetary need to it. So we have to kind of do that piece. But it all starts with, what do you want to do? If money wasn't a factor or object or time or whatever, what would you be doing? And so you have to kind of start with all of those goals and goal planning. And that's the fun part, is to do all of the dream and the pie in the sky, and then you have to kind of bring it down and say, okay, we need to do this, and we kind of match the money to it. But, you know, we, as women, you know, we know what we want in terms of our, the goals. So I never have any issues with kind of planning that piece of it. It's just kind of the secondary piece. Now I have to kind of peel the onion and the layers on. Let's work with the financial piece of matching the money to the dreams.
Right.
Very good.
I like that, matching the money to the dreams. I like that.
Oh, I think that it makes perfect sense. And when I used to do coaching before I bought any BBW, I did coaching for people that tended to be of our age, but people that weren't doing the work that they had been doing, and now they were trying to figure out how they were going to make money, what they were going to do with the rest of their lives. And I needed to go through a similar kind of a piece with them where I tried to find out what is it that they dreamed of doing, and then it's always a step of going from where you are now to how do you get to that dream. And and so I'm thinking that maybe along with that was coming some of the things that are in the book. I know in the book you talk about the 10-point retirement countdown, which I'm thinking that in a way is, you know, getting through those some onion layers. Is that correct?
We did. That countdown is really important to this process. I think there's this incredible, at least I can speak to this, an incredible urge to have the answer right now and go on and do something right now. And if you just jump to the doing something right now, I think it's pretty much guaranteed it will not be what you need to be doing or what you will love doing or what you even can stand to do. And the process that we took people through, it's actually the first piece was honoring the endings. You can't go to the next place until you finish the place you've been. You have to recover, you know, that whole grieving process. There's so many feelings that go with leaving what you've done in your main career. So we take people through that whole process of honoring the endings and letting go, recovering and renewing, and then reordering, making room for what's coming next. You know, these are things that if you just jump to the conclusion, it's just like, you know, jumping to the last page of the book. You can't do that and have the full experience of the book. And I think the urge for closure and for a decision is so strong that's why, you know, we've got that 10 points to try to slow people down so that they're going through then expand your pathways. You know, oh, oops. Then rediscover yourself. Then re-envision your why. Why do I want to do this? Then reconsider
mm-hmm.
your who. Who do I want to do it with? Then rethink your where. Well, for this matter, now that I think about it, I would just love to spend a month every year in Europe, which we do.
Mm-hmm.
But that has a lot to do with, you know, this process of waiting and then refocus your learning, go out and learn what you need, and then break free and start. So those earlier steps, you know, Kubler-Ross was so right. Marie and I both lost a beloved mate. When we met, Marie was a widow, and before we graduated, I was widowed. So we know about that the process, and that you can't skip the process. You really can't. You can postpone it. You can, you know, attempt to avoid it and have it just festering. But if you go through the process, if you let yourself go through the process, you will come to a very different place and you will have a very different answer. And that is what we really want people to do as part of their, you know, this huge decision about what I want to do next. Well, not just next. What do I want to do with the rest of my life?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and you know, in keeping with that, it goes back to what Carol Lee said about giving yourself permission to take the time to either rediscover, or if you never really did, for the first time, discover who you really are. What kind of a personality and temperament are you? What are your interests? What are you good at? What are your values? What are your non-negotiables? What are some things that one of my non-negotiables is, I will not work in January because I'm getting to heck out of these New England winters. So
mm-hmm.
January is a non-negotiable for me. You know, another non-negotiable for me is I've got to live near the ocean. I could never live away from the ocean. So, and in terms of your values, what are your non-negotiables? And some of us have never had the luxury or given ourselves permission to think about those things.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is fun to sit down and discover who you are. We all really love to talk about ourselves. We really do. And this book gives you plenty of time to look inside and see who you are before you decide what you want to do, where you want to do it with, where, who you want to do it with. First of all, who is this person?
All right. That's so important. And I'm curious, was a recognition of this fact, was that the genesis, the germ that got you started on writing this book? Or could you tell us a little bit about how the two of you got together and started this book? Because I really meant it when I was saying in the introduction that this is the book that I would write if I could ever get myself focused to sit down and do it. It's based on all the coaching that I did before I bought NABBW. I just know how important the content of Shifting Gears is. And I'm just curious as to what was the genesis that caused you, the two of you, to sit down and say, we're going to do this?
Well, for me,
you tell me. I don't remember.
Well,
I
went into a real tailspin when I retired, which was a shock because I'm a very, you know, consider myself to be a very logical, calm kind of person. But I just completely flatlined. I'd been so involved in my career. I did what I always, like Marie said, I always do. I've read every book I could find on the subject. But what I didn't know what to say when I introduced myself. I went to a conference because one of my major interests is in learning, as you probably can tell. And
mm-hmm.
so I went to Jensen, does a lot of work on cognitive development, and I went to a conference, and I was the only retired person there. Everybody else had an "and" to say after their name. I'm Carol Lee Duckworth, and. And as they were going around the room, everybody introducing, I was just in a state because I didn't know what to say after "and." I'm Carolee Duckworth, and I don't know what I'm doing. What am I supposed to say? But I think starting the book or getting started in the reading for the book and the research for the book and then the knowledge that this was a really important book, you know, and if I could have come to you for coaching, maybe I wouldn't have needed to write this book. But in order, since I didn't know you, I had to get started on the topic myself, and Marie and also did a sudden retirement, so we were sort of both in the same boat. And by the time we figured it out for ourselves, we had read so much, and I could see how I could start bringing in all of the work that I'd done from working with reemployment and re-careering. You know, all of that stuff now applied to me because that's what I was doing. I was trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up this time. I knew what I wanted to be when I grew up last time, but not what I wanted to be this time. So out of that came a tremendous urge to put together a book for ourselves and for everyone else, for the many other, for the other 77 million of us total.
We're
going to be going through the same thing.
Yeah. What Carolee did was she began to write down the process that she was going through. And at the same time, I was finding myself in a little different position. Instead of not knowing what to say, I'm Marie Langworthy, and I was embarrassed and ashamed. I found myself embarrassed and ashamed to say, I'm retired. I felt like I was a failure. I thought, oh, my God, these people don't realize that I used to be an important administrator.
I used to be somebody.
I used to be somebody, and they don't know that now. And, you know, I've given all that up, and now I'm nothing but retired. And I found myself embarrassed to say it. And, you know, I was almost ashamed to say it. And that's
I've refused to introduce myself in the past tense. Duckworth and what I used to be was.
Exactly. Oh, yes, and I say, well, I'm a retired educator. I'm a retired administrator. I was almost apologizing for it. So I think the two of us came, we were coming from different directions, but we both came to the same conclusion that, wait a minute, we're not retired anything. We got a whole bunch of things that we want to do. Let's start doing them. And the first thing we want to do is start writing a book about this.
Well, and then the whole thing about this being a process, because, and, you know, I know that it seems that if you look on page, whatever it is, 55, you see the 10-point countdown. But I'll have to confess that I was jumping to the let's just go ahead and let's cut to the chase and just do something. And I picked out the most bizarre sets of something to do you can imagine. And even though you don't know me really well and have only talked to me a few times, you could have told me that I wouldn't want to do the things that I was considering doing. You know, I was going to have an online business called the Size Swap Shop. And I was going to collect all these clothes, all these different sizes, and then if you gained weight, you could buy the clothes of somebody who had lost weight. And it was just like, what? I didn't even do the first. I bought the dummy to put the clothes on to model so I could take a picture, and I didn't even take a picture. I put the dummy down in the basement. It had some jacket on it, and that's where it stayed until we gave it to Goodwill. But that process, you know, the process that we've outlined in the book is realistic. Mm-hmm. It's not an event; it's a process. Mm-hmm. And when we try to do it as a, I mean, what I was finding, and I know a lot of people when they retire found that not only did I try to find something that just to do, to be doing, but all kinds of people had ideas about what they would like me to do.
Were any of them any value?
And do the accounting for my husband's business.
Yes.
You know, how about doing all of the typing for my business? It's like, no way. But, you know, that time will fill in or not. And this you owe to yourself. You owe it to yourself to not let that time just fill in and the ship take off, or, you know, the plane take off. I guess that's the wrong analogy, the rocket ship take off, until you're ready and until you have been the driver. You've defined this work that you are going to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just definitely such important work that I always emphasize that people don't plan that part. You know, just a little story. I have a really good girlfriend, and her father had just retired maybe about 3 years ago. And she tells me he just sits in his pajamas, he'll sleep in till about 3, then he'll watch some TV, and then the whole process starts all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And her mother, who is, you know, she retired, and now she's doing her own thing. He's doing his own thing, sitting on the couch in the pajamas, looking at TV all day, and they don't do things together. They really didn't plan that appropriately, and I think
mm-hmm.
she's worried because he's in such a depressed state because he'll sleep in until 3 and do the same thing over again, and you can't do that for the next 30 years. It's just, it just can't. So
no.
You really need to go through the process, like Carolee and Marie was saying, of you got to kind of, you know, mourn that, okay, I had this particular life, now I'm in this phase. I, you know, it's a whole identity thing, because a lot of people when they retired were tied to identities and what we were and what we
mm-hmm.
do. And then once that's gone, you know, what are you, like Marie was saying, I'm embarrassed to say this. I don't know what I'm doing. And people don't go through that proper process of
right.
transitioning properly into retirement, where all of a sudden I'm retired. How do I introduce myself? What am I? Who am I? What am I going to do? So it's just such important work. That's why I emphasize not just, I mean, of course, the savings part is very important, but you also have to do that other piece of it, which is,
mm-hmm.
you know, who am I? What am I going to do? Things like that. And I think your book is definitely one of the, I guess, training manuals that people should pick up to know how to do it properly, because a lot of people don't. And I think it's going to be quite an issue for a lot of boomers that are going through retirement and not doing it properly, just kind of going through, you know, kind of the end chapter. Okay, what am I going to do when jumping out and doing things? And then
go to the last page.
And go back.
Well, and I think couples.
Yeah, just go to the last page.
you brought up the thing about the husband sitting in the pajamas, but I think with retiring couples, they actually, I would suggest they get 2 copies of the book and not look at each other's copy, because there's a lot of things that they're going to be writing in this book. But I think each
mm-hmm.
one needs to write their own true feelings and thoughts,
mm-hmm.
and then they definitely need to be communicating about all of this.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
I think you'd be surprised at how you can be, you know, a lot of it will come together and be mutually supportive. I mean, to my absolute amazement, Marie now loves to go deep sea fishing. I mean, I couldn't even imagine her with a fishing pole. I mean, I don't have a mental image of this because I knew her before, but she and her retired husband have found something that they absolutely love to do together, but they've
mm-hmm.
you know, there's work that you do together too. My husband is, in order to publish books, I decided to form a publishing company, New Kabadi Press. Well, my husband is a major manager. He used to build entire office buildings, so he does know how to manage and get all the pieces in place so that the building goes up and is on schedule. So he's now managing the marketing of part of the marketing of our book, which is a course that we want to be offered through colleges, two-year and four-year colleges. And we want this course to be offered to the community so that people can come in and go through this process and discuss all of this together. And, you know, everybody would have a their own copy of the book and be able to personalize it. But then whatever they come up with, they would have a venue for discussing it all. So, you know, again, there can be a lot of synergy in a couple, but not unless they each go through the process themselves and then communicate
mm-hmm.
very clearly about what is essential to them in this time ahead.
Oh, I think that's so important, and that has been one of the questions that I've had people ask me as we're promoting this call, is they're saying, you know, I'm, you know, it's a case of women telling me, I've retired already, I'm at home, my husband's about to retire, and I'm petrified of what's going to happen when he's home 24/7. So I think this is a perfect concept, is to have them go to these classes like you're talking about. And I'm glad that you've developed classes of that nature, because I'm afraid that, you know, too many couples, they may have been married for 25 years or whatever, but maybe they haven't been talking for 25 years. They've, you know, kind of gone their own separate ways, and when retirement comes and they have time together again, I think sometimes they find, who is this person?
24/7.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is a very strong possibility, and this is not to end anything on a negative note, but the reality is that a couple can get to this point in their life and realize our goals are totally disparate, totally disparate. One does want to stay in his pajamas
mm-hmm.
and watch TV,
mm-hmm.
and the other wants to get up and go. And it's very possible that that could happen, which might be tragic, but that is a possibility.
Well, and I think Pam was right that the pajama thing is really a sign of depression. I think
mm-hmm.
that without a plan and without a future, you know, I think depression, I can't really remember my definition from psych class, but I think it has to do with being out of hope, without hope,
mm-hmm.
which means without
mm-hmm.
an idea of what's ahead, you know, what, you know, that whole thing we were talking about of a dream or a vision or just hope. And I think,
mm-hmm.
You know, yes, a couple may end up with very different ideas about where they want to go next individually, but I think that communication between them can become very rich. And, yeah, I mean, they may end up doing very different things, but they may end up with a lot of commonalities, too, and they may do different things and mutually support each other, which is, you know, there are many different ways
mm-hmm.
it can play out, but it will not play out if it's not, if the awareness isn't there, if that process has not been
mm-hmm.
gone, they have not gone through that process.
Mm. Exactly.
Mm. Well. Speaking of the, we call our book A Course in a Box, and it was Carol Lee's husband, actually, who came up with the idea of doing that, of turning the book into a course in a box, which we have done. So we are anxious and eager to see how well that's going to succeed as a course.
How do people find out about where the courses would be offered, or how do they find out how to get their community college to offer the course?
Well Barry here, has. Go ahead, Carolee.
We're on the air now. If you want a course about shifting gears, call your community college and ask them to have a course. It is really almost that simple. That's the way. You know, I did work at a community college, and that's the way it works. If there's a demand for something or a need for something, the community college is constantly looking for topics, for subjects, for anything that will be of positive and significant use to the community. And the course is in a box, you know, it's called a course in a box because it's all ready for anybody, for any person with a background. They would have to have a background in coaching or counseling or, you know, any of the people on this call could teach this course in a box.
Mm-hmm.
And many, many other people could teach it. They have to be interested in listening. They have to be able to work with people. They have to be good communicators. But the colleges will be able to find and employ someone to take the course. Everybody will have a book and lead, facilitate that course for their community. So if you want a course, just call your college and say, I want this course. Or if you happen to have the kind of background where you think this would be appropriate, say, I want this course and I want to teach this course.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Barry, who is helping us market it, is in the process of sending out a letter to hopefully our goal is every single community college in the country. We've already been contacted by 3 community colleges, and we have sent them copies of the syllabus, a copy of the book, and 3 sample workshop lessons to give them an idea of what the course is all about.
And some PowerPoint slides.
Yes, and the PowerPoint slides.
Oh, excellent. Well, now when I taught, I was in a community college in Illinois. Illinois has a good system of community colleges. I don't know, do all 50 states have good community college systems? Or?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Excellent.
Yes.
I know North and South Carolina just completely depend on their community college systems. They're the powerhouse that get, and a lot of students just, they're the outreach to the community. They're the place mm-hmm. that people come to get advanced technologies, to re-career, to learn things that were maybe not available before when they were in school. So, yes, the colleges down here, the 2-year colleges, do a massive amount of work. And let me just end maybe by asking if you might be available to teach one of these courses.
Well, I'm fascinated by it, actually. I haven't taught since about 25 years ago, but I think that the work that I do through NABBW is in a lot of ways very similar to the kind of work that I did when I worked in a community college. It's just, you know, in an online way. So I certainly would be interested to figure out how I might be able to do that, I assume, in my part of the world.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. In your neighborhood. I actually recruited the interviewer that came from the Charlotte Observer. He's retired. He's a retired high school psychology teacher. And
well,
that'd
be perfect.
He got so excited about the fact that we have Myers-Briggs and the personality indicators that we've actually mm-hmm. used measures to come up with these plans, not just kind of generalities. And he said, that's the part of my career I really miss, is working mm-hmm. with people about, mm-hmm. as they learn about themselves in these very significant ways. And I said, well, how would you feel about teaching a course? And he said, well, keep me in mind. So if it's offered at Catawba Community College, I expect that Bruce, whatever his name is, will be the instructor.
Excellent. Well, that is good that you were putting this out on the recording so people can keep that in mind for wherever their community colleges are, because it's what you said. Community colleges are there listening to the groundswell of what's going on in the community, saying, okay, how can we help? So it seems like a perfect mm-hmm. fit for that. I'm trying to look at our time here, and I see that we're getting close to the 2 hours that I had allowed, so I'd like to ask if there's anything that any of you, all 3 of you, would like to say before we close. And at the close, I will give all your website addresses again, and that sort of useful information that I think everybody's wondering about. But anything before I do that?
I think we have talked, and it has been wonderful, but this may be a good place to close it, especially since my phone battery is about to die.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'll just say thank you to everyone. Well, Pam, is there anything that you wanted to say, or I don't want to cut everybody off?
I think we've covered it all, but I just wanted to, you guys have mentioned the community colleges. I think this is really great work that, you know, you may want to introduce maybe through HR departments at employers, because, you know, they're always looking for extra, you know, things to offer to their employees as a benefit, because nobody really does this work. Somebody comes in and does, you know, the 401k and all of the money part of it, but nothing on this scale to really kind of transition people out properly from that. So tell your marketing person, maybe think about HR departments as well.
Well, that's a great idea. Thank you so much, Pam.
Great idea.
Suggestion. Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to thank Pam, Carolee, and Marie for this wonderful discussion that we've had here this evening. You've been great guests, and we've had, you know, just incredibly wonderful discussion, I believe. So I thank everyone who's been listening to the call. I didn't give you a chance to ask questions, but hopefully we covered enough things. And if not, you can send email to any of our speakers here with your own questions. So let me get you the relevant contact information for everyone. You can learn more about Pam Sams at her newly revised website. Pam, I just noticed that you've changed it, and I love the new look of it. www.jacksonsams.com, and it contains a lot of information, including fascinating slideshow offering facts related to retirees and retirement preparedness. And if you wanted to communicate with Pam by email, she's Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at jacksonsams.com. Carolee and Marie have also got prodigious amounts of content on their website, which is found at www.shiftinggearstoyourlifeandworkafterretirement.com. Everything spelled out exactly as it is properly spelled.
Yes.
And there's a handy form on the site that allows you to communicate directly with either of them. So I think that's probably the preferred way to communicate with email with you two. Is that correct, Carolee and Marie?
Yes.
Through your website?
Yes, that would be perfect.
Okay. And
you can also get a hold of me at marielangworthy@att.net.
Excellent. I didn't want to give that out in case you,
that's,
you know,
okay,
didn't want everyone to know about it. So
that's
and
fine.
We've got my website up, carolieduckworth.com. And we're about to have Marie's up, marielangworthy.com.
Excellent. I did not know about those. So
great.
Thank you for sharing that information. If anyone would like to know more about the National Association for Baby Boomer Women, you can find us at www.nabbw.com. We have a forum at boomerwomenspeak.com and a Facebook page, which we'd love to hear from people on our Facebook page, and that's easy, facebook.com/nabbw. So that's all I have for tonight. I want to thank everyone for joining us, especially thank our expert panel and the wonderful information that you provided, and I'm going to say good night.
Thank you so much.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.